Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
For the 22nd time in the 55-year history of the Patriots franchise, playoffs are a reality. 16 times now in the 21 seasons since Robert Kraft purchased this team.
Playoffs?
That playoffs are a possibility and a reality as the Patriots win the AFC East Championship for the 11th time in 12 seasons. Everyone, and welcome inside the playbook on a Tuesday here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. That's pretty impressive right off the top, you have to admit. And you wonder why people take pot shots at New England from all over the country. It's pretty easy to see why, because they hate us. They all hate us. Everybody hates us. Everybody in the NFL hates us. And I don't blame them, because they all want to be us. They all want to be like us. They all want to emulate us. They want to win as much as the Patriots do. I get that. There's a certain amount of professional jealousy involved here, I think. There's also, I think, a certain amount of them again. You know, that maybe those who are actually into the competition or the storylines love a good new story. Well, how about this for a story? How does this grab you? Like I said, 16 seasons, 16 playoff berths in 21 seasons, 11 AFC championships in the last 12, 12 out of 14 as well since Bill Belichick has been the coach. Now, I think in this day and age of parity, of salary caps, of players going hither and yon in the NFL, that makes this story all the more compelling, because it just seems year in and year out, New England is a player. Now, we've spent some time talking about this in the past, probably bears repeating here as well, but in all honesty, doesn't everybody like the fact that this franchise, that this team, that this organization has chosen to try to remain relevant every year? Just get in the dance. Just get in the dance. Just get in the dance. Rather than maybe mortgage a year or two in the future for that one or two guys that would put you at the salary cap limit and may or may not win a championship for, but you know that, you know, in a couple of years you're going to pay for it heavily and you're probably going to fall to 8-8 or 7-9 or 6-10 and miss out on the playoffs. See, the way the Patriots have it figured, the way the parity is in the NFL, anybody can go from being a superstar team to middle of the pack with one key injury. That's just the way it is. So how do we stay competitive in that regard? Number one, you do the best you can, certainly, to keep your guys in shape. Number two, you build depth, quality depth on your team, in your organization, to where when somebody does go down, and they will, and they do, you can overcome it as well as anybody else in the league. That's really, there's really no other rocket science involved here. Last couple of years, the Patriots have struggled at times, and I know defensively has been the focal point for a lot of us covering the team, because they just weren't what we would consider championship caliber. And a lot of that had to do with, and we have mentioned this throughout the course of this season, a lot of that had to do with turning this franchise from one of the oldest, most experienced teams in the league to one of the youngest. They had to undergo a metamorphosis. And that metamorphosis is still taking place. It's still happening. Now, they are considerably younger. Half the roster wasn't in the league when the Patriots were in the Super Bowl last. We've said that a few times this year. It's still the case. They will still continue to move that direction, in my opinion, in the next offseason. And we're not going to jump into a lot of next offseason stuff here today. But the point is that this metamorphosis isn't complete yet. It's still a work in progress. And yet this team has positioned itself, this organization has positioned itself now for what their goal was, and that is to get into the postseason for a chance. They want to get in the tournament. And now they have it. They're in the tournament. With 2 weeks left to go in the regular season, they will be playing in the postseason. Now, where will they figure in the postseason? We don't know yet. A lot of that could be decided as early as this weekend, playing at the Jets. Some of it may not even be decided until the last weekend with the final home game here against Buffalo. And by the way, don't look past this week. I know it's the Jets. They're 3-11, but, you know, they won a game last week. They on the road that maybe they shouldn't have won, and even the Jets can't do the whole first top draft pick thing right by winning. I thought for sure they would take the tailspin, but guess not. So even the Jets are screwing up the chance of getting in the number one draft pick. And Buffalo, with their win this past weekend, Buffalo beating Green Bay, that ought to grab your attention. My guess is that Buffalo probably also wins this week, although, you know, got to take a little harder look at it. But should they win this week, then you know they have something to play for on the last week. And if it comes right down to it, frankly, I hope the Patriots have home field advantage throughout the playoffs also to play for in the last week to make that last game meaningful. You couldn't dare rest your regulars with that kind of game on the line. We had an email that was left over here from PFW where Kenneth says, if Denver loses to Cincinnati and we beat the Jets next week, we could lose to Buffalo and still be the number one seed. Patriots and Broncos would both be 12-4. I would, without question, sit Gronk and Revis. They're not worth risking a potentially pointless Buffalo game pending a Denver loss to the Bengals. I know we don't normally rest players, but without question, I think Gronk should skip a meaningless game. Look, I've always been a proponent of football players play football. I've never changed from that. I obviously think that there are situations that if a guy is banged up, that you'd probably think twice about putting him in there and getting his quote unquote regular reps. But football players play football. Anybody can get hurt on any given snap of the ball, any given play, any given situation. You got to play, and you can't base your fortunes on what happens in another game. You need to take charge. You need to assume responsibility. Forget Denver and Cincinnati. That's kind of how I look at it. I hope that answers your question, Kenneth. But I understand where it comes from because this is one of the great debates that we have at the end of every year. It always is. You rest them. You play them. Do they, look. If you have a bye in the first round, why would you sit anybody? You're going to get 2 weeks off, basically. So why would you rest somebody for another week? That makes no sense. Now, if you had to play on wild card weekend, I can understand it a little more. Again, I'm all about football players playing football. But I can understand the process if a guy's banged up or has been nicked or whatever and bruised, or maybe he's fought through injuries, or maybe he's missed a few games during the regular season, and you want to give him a chance to heal up a little more for a meaningful game. I get that. But I think that's an entirely different situation. You're talking about resting two guys completely healthy, largely completely healthy. But I wouldn't do that. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's what I would do. All right, so you got meaningful football still to play. You got the playoffs accomplished again. You've achieved mission one. That's win the division and get into the tournament. That's been accomplished. Now, what's a short-term accomplishment for the next 2 weeks? I think that's an obvious one. Win them both. Clinch home field advantage throughout the playoffs, which means that if you win your first game, which you should do, although again, we have to give, say if it's Indianapolis or, Cincinnati or whomever that has to come in here again, on the divisional playoff, you still have to get by a worthy opponent, a team that can beat you, has beaten you in the past. Before you can even get to the AFC Championship game, and the assumption is that it'll be Denver. That's an assumption. I'm not making any assumptions about potential playoff teams right now. But that has to be your goal. Win the next two, road to the Super Bowl goes clearly through Foxborough. I guess that part of my, part of my, my intuition here in thinking about it, that in thinking about that and considering where the Patriots stand right now, is, first of all, I hope that the players aren't necessarily focused on that, you know, because we did get, you know, Terrence Knighton, thank goodness for pot roast, right? You know, opening up his mouth and giving, you know, bulletin board material. And I guess this team down the hallway here still does pay attention to bulletin board material because, you know, Darrelle Revis said as much this week. And the Miami players chirped after week one, beating the Patriots 33-20 and chirping about, you know, how they should have hung 50 on them. And then he was backed up, Revis was, by Devin McCourty. He said, yeah, we really have been waiting all year for the rematch for this one. And you got the sense. Didn't you get the sense watching the game on Sunday, especially in the second half after the Patriots had already put 24 up on the board? It's 38-13. They're turning the page in the fourth quarter, and they're still throwing the ball. I had the distinct sense that they wanted to rub it in their faces, that they were playing with a purpose, that they really wanted payback. It's the first time all year that I've really sensed the Patriots wanted payback on somebody, that it was personal. They got another field goal out of it, and then they pulled the dogs back. You know, they put the 40 burger on them, and we'll see you again next year, Miami. See, I liked that. That was playing with a little bit of edge, playing with a little bit of a tood. I liked that. That's the first time I've really kind of seen that. And to me, that makes me feel better about this team's chances over the next 2 weeks. These are two games that they should win, and I think we can all agree in that regard, especially because, A, the Jets are long out of it, and, B, Buffalo has to come here. And the Patriots have won, what now, 15, 16 in a row divisional games at home? So there's no reason to think that they can't beat Buffalo here, although Buffalo will be playing with, we have nothing to lose, and that's where teams are most dangerous. When they got nothing to lose and everything to gain, that's a dangerous team, no matter the sport. It's a dangerous team, and we'll deal with more on that next week before the holiday. But suffice to say, I'm in a better spot today with the Patriots than I was even a week ago. Certainly in a better spot than you were a couple of weeks ago, even going into the Green Bay game. Better spot. I don't know why. I think it's just because I saw them put the pedal to the metal. I saw them step on the gas a little bit in that second half, in that third quarter, after an abysmal, horrid first half. Even though they had a lead at halftime, this team left the field to booze here at Gillette. Booze! And it was obvious. It wasn't just a smattering. It was pretty noisy. Kevin, am I right about that? They booed. They gave them, you know, the cat calls leaving the field. And I looked at the scoreboard and I said, well, I realized they didn't play very well. And the clock was horribly mismanaged at the end of the first half, giving Miami the opportunity to score, which they did. But you still had a lead. You still had a lead. So it was actually somewhat heartening to see this team really not make any overt adjustments at halftime. They decided in the locker room, we just flat out need to execute better. And they did. And they focused, and they put the pedal to the metal, and they floored Miami. So as bad as that first half may have been, and it was a stinker, the second half, to me, overruled. It was that impressive in what they did to a Dolphins team that also was playing for its postseason lives. And the Patriots snuffed that out like you snuff out a cigarette butt. That, you know, it's easy to come up with a nitpick for Sunday. Just look at the whole first half. That's one big fat nitpick right there. Got some others, of course, that I will share with you. Wrote about them on the View from Above column here today on the website. But certainly want you to share with me your nitpicks from Sunday. Webradio@patriots.com, the email address, toll-free number 855-PATS-500, 855-728-7500, the number. Hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster. Again, on Twitter, at JRBroadcaster, and Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. Find me on Twitter, or find me on Facebook, and submit a friend request if you haven't. And then we can chat and we can post during the show and during off hours as well on my own personal Facebook page. So there's several different ways to give me your thoughts, your nitpicks here on hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. I want you to consider one other thing today before we get into the conversation. And Eric Friends, of course, from Boston.com, covering the AFC East, he will join us in hour number two of the playbook, as he always does on Nitpick Tuesdays. But I want you to consider one other business item for today in sending me your thoughts and letters and notes and picking up the telephone and doing it good old-fashioned talk radio style here on the program. I got to thinking earlier today at this late stage in the season, because I'm not sure how much of a chance we'll get really to do this. We might get a chance to do this a little bit if we get the bye, if the team gets the bye. Then we'll have bi-week programming here, which, of course, will bring back, you know, a game show day, which will be cool. And we'll definitely come up with something special for that again. Oh, doggone it, I almost forgot. We had a winner last week. We had a score prediction winner. How could I forget? Oh, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. Hang on just a second, because Kevin's on the phone. Kevin, you have a drum roll? Do you have a drum roll in there somewhere? Because I think this deserves a drum roll. He's going to find it. Here it comes. Now we need something like trumpets blaring, but I don't think we have that, do we? Okay. All right. Congratulations to Herman Moreno. There you go. Because Herman correctly selected 41-13. Yeah, yeah. So it took us all the way to week 15. Week 15! Of the NFL season before we finally had someone correctly predict a Patriots score. So Herman from Waco, Texas, of all places. In fact, Kev, no word of a lie, when I gave you his address, Herman lives about five blocks from where I used to live in Waco, about 35 years ago.
Is that yearbook is on the way.
Is that weird?
Yeah, I sent you confirmation of that yesterday.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. So, Herman, you're
on the ball.
Your media guide yearbook is on its way to you. Congratulations. So, see, you can win something here on the program. You absolutely can. Last year we gave away four or five, I think it was, and it was on 1 week. And, by the way, it was against Miami. This is 2 years in a row that our only winners have come Miami game week. So I would like nothing better than to give away a handful this week with the Patriots playing the Jets. But you've got to do your predicting, and that'll come up on Thursday's program. That's just kind of a weird thing. But congratulations to Herman, and he's got his yearbook media guide on the way. So I didn't want to forget that. All right, one other issue that I wanted to throw out at you today. And I got to thinking about this, when going through some of my notes earlier today and whether or not we get a chance to do it later in the year or not during the bye week. But I wanted to talk about underappreciated players. Not so much underrated players, because if you say someone is underrated, I honestly kind of believe that means you had a preconceived notion of what a player's worth should be. And I'm really just kind of looking at players that are almost coming from off the map. So I guess in a sense it could be underrated because they weren't rated at all. But I'm thinking more along the lines of underappreciated players. And I want you to come up with who, in your opinion, is the most underappreciated Patriot player. Now, I know you're going to have your favorites. I know you're going to have, the guys that you're fans of in particular, that you follow on Twitter. What? That's fine. But would you give me an underappreciated player? Tell me why you feel like he's not getting the run that he should be getting from either us, me, the PFW guys, the New England media, the national media. Why should he be getting the run in your estimation? Why should this underappreciated player be noteworthy in all of our eyes? What about this player singles him out? Now, I know you've got some thoughts on that. I think I tweeted out earlier that we talk about underrated, overrated. I'm gonna backtrack on that just a little bit, only because, A, I really don't like talking about overrated guys. I think it's sometimes unfair to the player. We might get into that a little bit later for fun. But today I want to focus on underappreciated players, guys that have quietly gone about their job that don't grab the spotlight, guys that have gone about their job that don't seem to get all the press or the media attention or the social media love, the hidden gems, the guys that to me create the backbone of this Patriot team that falls right in step with the organizational theory that this is how we do it. This is how we do things. This is the Patriot way. The philosophy of let's be relevant every year. Let's be in the hunt every year, as I suggested earlier at the top of the program today. That's a prevalent feeling now, without a shadow of a doubt, in this organization. We want to be competitive every year. We feel we can be competitive if we do things this way every year. Hard to argue that point. The one year that they haven't won the division title in the last dozen was when Tom Brady went down against Kansas City, and Matt Castle still led this team to an 11-5 record. And they just missed out on winning the title, losing to the Miami Dolphins. But every year in the last dozen, besides that one, they've been a division champ. Why? Because they've done things pretty much the same way. They did it this way. Even as this metamorphosis from experience and age to inexperience and youth continues to play itself out with the Patriots franchise, organization, and the football team. It's a remarkable story. It really is. That these guys have found the formula in order to remain relevant in today's NFL. And this is why, friends, everybody in the league hates the Patriots. Because they figured it out, and their own teams cannot. 855-PATS-500. 855-728-7500. We're getting locked and loaded on the phone lines. You can go right through as well. webradio@patriots.com in the email. You can get right through on Twitter @JRBroadcaster. And you can jump right in on Facebook, John.Rook. Many different ways you can get to me on this one with your nitpicks for Sunday and an underappreciated player. Going to lead it off with Isaac in Fort Lauderdale. Hey, Isaac, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Hey, before I get to my nitpicks, and I want to make a comment about your Thursday show, but before I do all of that, I want to ask you a comment you made starting off the show. Like, so if Denver beat Cincinnati this week, you still believe we should play key players against Buffalo?
Play players. Play them. I don't think you should hold them.
I got to disagree with you on that, man.
Well, you can disagree all you want, but football players play, and those players themselves would say, I want to play.
Yeah, I know they'll actually want to play, but you got to, you know, like, Gronkowski.
But does that keep them from getting hurt in a key game? That's all I'm going to say, Isaac. If you sit them out, that's fine. All right, and maybe you say you even win the game that you sit them out. What happens in the first play of the next game if they get, you know, they get hurt? Where are you then? That game did not matter to you one bit.
Let me ask you this. Would you rather them get hurt in that key playoff game, or would you rather them get hurt?
Football players get hurt all the time, Isaac. They get hurt all the time. I understand where you're coming from, and I know that teams do that from time to time. I just disagree with it. Football players get hurt all the time. It just doesn't matter when they get hurt. And this team has also built itself to the point where they have, at least right now, enough to overcome it. Now, if they lost a Brady or a Gronkowski, I think we realize those are probably the two most valuable pieces to the puzzle. And it dramatically changes the outlook for this team. But the Patriots are saying, and this is from the Patriots' point of view, Patriots are saying, look, we don't have to worry about, you know, we only have to worry about two, maybe three teams. That's all we got to worry about. We don't have to worry about the other 28 or 29.
What about limiting the snaps against Buffalo? All right. They don't sit out the whole game.
Now, you're asking me a completely different question, brother. Limiting snaps, sure, absolutely. Especially if the game means nothing.
Yeah.
If you've already clinched number one and it means nothing, yes, I could certainly see them playing a half and saying good night in the second half. That's like a preseason game, yes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, I think I lean to that more than, okay.
That part I agree with you.
All right, yeah. I want to make a comment about your Thursday show. I believe, who's the guy, Russell Baffert, you have on?
Yes.
Man, it's like, I want to let you know, I can listen to that guy talk football all day.
He's pretty good, isn't he?
Yes, he's good, man.
That's why we call him the guru.
Yeah, when I was hearing him talk last Thursday, I like, man, he got to be on the show every day of the week.
I don't think he can. I don't think we can afford his salary budget. But he's really good. Russell's a dear friend. Has been a friend for I'd say close to. Wow, gosh, he's been a friend for about 15 years since I started working at ESPN back in the late 90s, and we've maintained a friendship through largely through football ever since. And when we launched this program, he said he'd love to do it, and this is while he was still at ESPN. And even since he's now set out on his own and is making a pretty good living for himself, doing a lot of different things around the NFL and covering the National Football League, he's remained very loyal. The guy is the epitome of a loyal friend, and so we're going to give him all the love we can.
Yeah, it's like rarely you find people who can just talk football like that and just throw out facts the way he does, and like that's awesome, man. Like honestly, like I went back and played the podcast and I fast forward to your conversation just to hear the conversation again, man. That's just awesome.
Well, I appreciate you doing that, Isaac, and I'll make sure that I pass that along to him. In fact, you know, you can also always send him a note on Thursdays, you know, here on the show, and I'll pass it along to him there as well.
Yeah, all right, and I'm gonna get to my nitpicks of the game.
Go.
My first nitpick, I want to say just being predictable. It's like, I don't know, like, every time we're on the center, it seems like that's when the team knows we're going to run the ball. Like, I would like to see more running out the shotgun. I know, look, I think LeGarrette Blount scored his first touchdown, a run out the shotgun, but, like, the run plays are so predictable to me. It's like teams know when Tom Brady's on the center, it's a large chance that we're running the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of the reason why LeGarrette Blount has been getting stuff, because like we always run the ball under center. Like I think we should run out of the shotgun more.
Well, I think you could do that. The thing that frustrates me about the running game, Isaac, is it takes him a while to find the hole. And Jonas Gray is the guy that can hit the hole a little bit faster, a little bit more authority. I think we saw that, you know, a great example of that this last weekend against Miami. So, you know, I'd like to see somebody hit, you know, pop the hole really, really quickly in terms of getting into, you know, past the line of scrimmage and getting into the linebacking core in the secondary. And I think Gray can give you that more so than Blount. And so I'd really like to see a little bit more of an equitable split in the carries between those two.
Yeah, and my other nitpick would be the drive, like, right before they score, before halftime, like, the three running plays, they call timeouts, it's clear they want to get the ball back, and I think we should have put a pass in there and get the first down, because I think we just played right into Miami hand, they called the timeout, we still ran the ball, and I'm also going to nitpick on the defense. I'm like, I think against Green Bay, I know they got a good punt return, but come on, defense, make a stop before halftime, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, against Green Bay, we let them go down the field and score right before halftime. The defense, Jordy Nelson, man.
Yeah.
We let the defense still let Miami go down and score, like, field goal or something, you know?
Yeah, well, actually, and I appreciate that, Isaac. Thank you. And that's good stuff, as always. I would actually tell you that I blame the offense more than I blame the defense for the quick score before halftime against Miami. Because the offense play call, you know, when they had the football, you know, deep in their end of the field with 40 seconds left, you got to run the clock out. If you're not going, you know, down the field to try to get, you know, a quick three, which to me would have been the thing to do, because they, once again, won the toss and elected to defer, as they always do, which makes me gnash my teeth every time they do it. But, you know, I thought the whole idea was to get a two-for-one type of situation where you close out the half, try to get a score, and then you get the first position of the second half and get another score and try to double whammy the opponent. I thought that was the whole point of the idea of deferring, and they don't do that. They sit on the ball, and not only do they sit on the ball, but they punt the ball. They allow a huge return, one play, bang, touchdown. Oh, talk about grinding my gears. Wow. Pathetically bad. Bad management, bad play calling, bad execution, bad everything. Which makes the second half, I think, even more remarkable, to be honest with you. Here's Dave in Connecticut. Dave, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How we doing today?
Good, Dave.
Okay, let's start off by not with a nitpick, but I'm going to do a little love here. The offensive line, which I know I've been riding all season long, and a lot of people have been, played an excellent game. They didn't give up a sack. So a lot of love for them guys, and they're going to, you know, keep up the good work. We're not done there yet.
In terms of underappreciated? Is that what you're talking about in terms of underappreciated?
That whole unit would be my choice for that.
Okay.
You know, for the underappreciated aspect of the game. You know, I think if that's a preview of what they're going to, you know, work with, I think we're going to be all right for the remainder of our two games there, and you know, the run to the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Secondly, you know, my nitpick, you just hit it. It was the that whole scenario with the offensive play calling and then giving up the punt and the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as you said a second ago, we came out and we put them to bed in the second half. Okay. I'm not worried about Denver. Whatever Denver does, if Denver wins out, Denver wins out. What we got to do here is win our two games. You know, we're sitting in the catbird seat. You get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, and whatever happens, happens. Okay? To be honest with you, I'm a little nervous about this Jet game. Now, let me just preface this, because I know Rex Ryan and the Jets would love, it would make their season. To me, it would be their Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If they could come in, if they, you know, we go to the MetLife and they beat us.
Absolutely.
So what we need to do as a team and as a game plan is go in there and smash these guys from the first series on. I mean, pedal to the metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know who the better team is. The entire NFL knows who the better team is.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just destroy these guys. Okay. And not let up. You know, you need to put them to bed and let them know, hey, go to the light, guys. Go to the light, because that light is your first round pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
It's over. You know, they cannot allow this team to sit around with them and play with them. We need to bury them from the jump. And that's, you know, and that's on defense and offense. You know, we need to be aggressive on defense and you know, clog up that run. And get after the quarterback and make him make some mistakes and capitalize on them. You know, I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Yep.
I think, you know, if you give these guys a chance to sit around, you're going to give them hope.
Right.
And like I said, this is their Super Bowl against us. I mean, this would be the highlight tape.
Totally agree. You want to punch them while they're down. You don't want to give them a chance to get up off the carpet and pull a surprise late. And if you have any concerns or any worries at all, letting kind of Miami hang around like they did in the first half of this game this last Sunday indicates to me that, you know, there's still some things that this Patriots team really needs to work on. And this is one of them, making sure that they execute for 60 minutes, not just 30 minutes.
That's it. I mean, you know, I've been saying it all season long. They still have not played a complete game. You know, those were always like a tale of two halves.
Right, it was.
Not defensively, I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, defensively, you know, hats off the defense. They really, you know, come up and make some plays, and when they've had to. Okay. Offensively, I just, you know, this Josh McDaniels' play calling, you know, still bothersome to me. It really is. I mean, if he's not there next year, I wouldn't miss him. I really wouldn't. I think he's underutilizing, you know, certain players. It was ridiculous. I think the first four plays or five plays went to Edelman, right?
Yeah.
Pass.
Well, but they were also they were also taking what the defense was giving them.
Yeah, but
they did a pretty good job of sticking on Gronkowski early, and then the Patriots sort of
they ran
the seam route up the middle to try to break him open, and they definitely wanted to try to, you know, to bust some noggins on that one. They just kind of forced it in there, and fortunately for the Patriots that you know, Gronk had a half a step on the defensive backs.
Yeah. You know, and here's another nitpick, you know, I'm sure that they work at it in practice, but you know, the long ball for us this year has just been, it just hasn't been there. It's been underthrown or overthrown by inches. You know, I mean,
I'm almost of the opinion now, Dave, that they do that largely just to show the team that they can, that they have it in their arsenal. They do it to kind of loosen them up a little bit.
Right. All right. But, I mean, you know, it's there. It's there for the taking. I mean, come on, Gronkowski, go find a Finnegan or whatever his name is, you know, for Miami, a cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was clearly beat the man. You know, but the ball was underthrown. You know, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, hey, a win is a win. The, you know, like you said, the offense did turn it on in the second half of the game. We just need to, you know, play a complete game here. I mean, you know, whether it's the game plan or you know, the players themselves. You know, I think, you know, especially after that Brady run, it kind of lit up the team.
That's a very, very good point, Dave. That's a very good point.
You know, I mean, you know, and you know, the C-Tom run, it's, you know, I thought I was watching something in slow motion, but he got there.
He did get there.
You know, then he did his best Drew Bledsoe imitation in 2001 in the AFC Championship game.
Right.
When he got blasted on the sidelines.
Right, right.
You know, so,
there's no question that it gave them a spark, and thanks for the phone call, Dave. No question it gave them a spark. That's what they needed. It shouldn't have to take something like that to give them a spark, and I think that's the next level of play that they've got to get to, and they can work the next 2 weeks on trying to get there. Here's Dale in New Hampshire up next. Hello, Dale.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Good, sir.
I had three nitpicks, and I'm going to have to apologize for my crappy voice right now. I lost it at about halftime.
I understand completely.
Before the game, let you know, this is the first game I was going to make to my wife's anniversary present, and it was a blast.
That's right. I remember you said that a week ago. So how was the experience?
The stadium reeked of beer and steak bombs, but it was out of hell, but it was a blast.
Well, okay.
I had such a great time.
That's funny.
I had three nitpicks for you. My first nitpick is, good God, I should have gotten to many more games than that. That shouldn't have been my first game.
Yeah, there you go. good way to bust your own chops. I like that.
Yeah. My second one, and that's kind of pointless too, is I picked horrible. I said we were going to lose or win 28-23. What a blowout.
That's true. One, yeah.
Yeah, my third one, I mean, talk about beating a dead horse. The first half and the second half, we've been talking about it all day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it was. There's just got to be a way to, there's just got to be a way to have a better performance than that. They're probably very lucky. If they've been on the road, they might have been buried in that first half. So, they still played well enough, especially defensively, in order to have a lead at halftime. But, you know, that whole sequence in the last minute of the half was, horrific. I mean, that was New York Jets-esque, if you ask me. And, that's the kind of thing that can get a team beat.
Yep. But watching that, my wife got some pretty good seats. I was pretty close. I mean, Arrington running the blocked field goal back. If he rolled one more time, he would have ended up in our lap.
Nice. Nice.
But watching the rest of it, I can't really blame Brady for that first interception. That was just a bad tip. But it looked like they were starting to drive on that first drive, and then they lost steam.
Yeah, they were. And the nitpick that I had with that is that Brady was coming over the top on his throws a little bit more, and he was throwing down. And so he wasn't elevating his throws. He wasn't, he wasn't putting any lift on them. And apparently that's what, Miami had, scouted and seeing the film of late of Tom. And so that's why you saw them always jumping whenever Brady would release the ball. And that's why he had like four, I think, tip passes at the line of scrimmage, because he's just coming over the top a little bit too much with his release. He needs to put a little bit more air under the ball and he can fix that problem.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, drop it into the bucket instead of firing it down the hole.
Right. And that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to put a little bit more zip on the ball. And when you try to do that, you didn't generally try to whip it in there. And that's, you come from the angle from over the top. And it's kind of like throwing a two-seam fastball, in baseball. You're going to come over the top of that thing, and you're just going to try to pop it with your wrist. And you kind of put a zip right in there to the receiver. That's what he was doing. The problem is that you got linemen that are 6'5 and up that can get their hands up in the air and knock those things down pretty easily. And so got to give Miami some credit for doing that. And that's an easy adjustment for Tom to make. He just didn't really make it, that quickly.
Yeah. And as for underappreciated, I don't know so much about underappreciated. I mean, everybody's kind of underappreciated on the offense, on the offensive line for most of the season. But I definitely have an underrated. And I've been saying it all year. I kind of feel like Rob Ninkovich has been an underrated member of our defense. Like, they kind of don't pay much attention to him. But he gets in there, and that guy works.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky enough to actually watch him get a sack, so I'm happy about that.
But, right, sure.
But always churning, always going after whatever his target is. I mean, he's not a running up the field trying to get to a receiver kind of guy, but I'm always impressed every time I see him work.
Yep, yep. Good one.
You're going to throw that thought out there for you.
I think that's a good one. Dale, that's great stuff. I'm glad you had a good time on your initial voyage into Gillette, and I also hope that you will not be a stranger from here on out. Eldridge in North Carolina is up next. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
I'm doing good, too.
Excellent.
I didn't see the game because it wouldn't show where I was at, and I was in Miami, believe it or not.
Were you really?
Yes, okay. Sir. I was dropping a load down there down that way, coming back up. But I caught play-by-play and the live chat on Patriots logo.
Right.
The little broadcast thing. I saw most of it, heard most of it.
Okay.
But my next pick is the same one going to be like the last couple weeks, man. Well, all year. Offensive line play and Josh McDaniels play call. And I think, like you said, he overthinks things too much.
Mm-hmm.
By running for rain, little heels between the tackles and Element. When you got, like I said, you got Blunt, you got Gray. At least line up and at least try traditional first. If you ain't getting nowhere, then try to trick them. But just come off and just try that at first, and that team give us 600 yards in the last three games on the ground. I just don't get it, you know. But I guess that's why they pay even a big buck.
Yeah, that's true.
Make all the play calls.
Right.
But that's mainly my two nitpicks, you know. But worrying about the next two games, yes. One, Buffalo's going to be playing for nothing, all for nothing, because if they do, you know, they still got a chance to get in. They're on the outside looking in. They got to win this week and win next week. And since they beat Green Bay, they can play their chops like this is another Packer game.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
You got a number one quarterback, a passing offense, and we see what we did against them. So they can do that. And you know how Rex Ryan is, like you said. He want to hang a Patriots belt on his mantle one last time if he can get it. So if they ain't focused, you know, which I'm pretty sure they will be, but if they play like they did the first half,
yep,
be in for a fight like we did the first game in Gillette.
Right.
That's what I think. You know. And the most underrated, well, not underrated, to me is Akeem Ayers. I knew once they got him, I jumped up and down. I mean, I jumped out of my truck, jumped up and down. Because to me, I saw him in college when he played a little bit in college. And I saw him when he played for Tennessee when he did have his little run. He was great. He was
right.
Speed rusher. He
right.
could cover tight ends and cover back. They just ain't used him to his full potential yet, I don't think. You know, they're probably still filling him out. But the role that he's filling, he's doing good. You know,
mm-hmm.
doing real good at him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy about him. And I think Casillas is the same way, but I guess his role is limited now since Hightower came back and Jones back. But I think those two backers will boost the defense a little bit better. You know, Nathan replaced Hightower and Jones with him, but I think if they're back, they'd be a whole lot better.
Right.
And coverage and everything like that.
Okay.
But other than that, you know, I'm pretty satisfied. Except for I got to wear a Charger hat for the Green Bay loss that I made a bet with. Couple weeks ago,
wait a second. Why do you have to wear a Charger hat for the Green Bay loss?
Because my baby's a Charger.
Because you're what?
Because my baby's a Charger. She's a Charger fan.
Okay, but why would you? Why wouldn't you have to wear a Green Bay hat?
Because I told her to kick Green Bay's butt until she made the bet. And the
oh,
bet is, we lose.
So now you gotta. Yeah, so you have to wear her favorite team's hat. I got it. Okay.
Charger hat. If I win, she can wear a Patriot hat. But it didn't happen. But when we whipped the Chargers, couldn't hear a word out of them.
Got it.
Yes, but that was it. But other than that, John, just a moment to nitpick. And I hope we drop a 50 burger on the Jets because I don't like the Jets either. What for darn? I hope we do. But I don't think it'll be a 50 burger. If they play like they did the first half,
yeah,
probably another 28-25 game again. But one more thing. Brady.
Yeah.
That's my quarterback. I'll go to the end earth with him. I just wish, you know, I guess, I don't know if it's timing in his head or the line that he's sort of a little suspect with. I just wish he could get his throws down just a little bit better. And like these next four games,
mm-hmm.
he got to play Brady like 2001 and 2007. Lights out. You got to play that way.
Sure.
You know, you're going to have to.
Sure.
Other than that, that's it. But, John, you have a good one, man.
Thanks, Eldridge. Good stuff as always. Here's Kareem in New Jersey. Hey, Kareem.
John, what's up, baby?
How are you?
Good, good. Thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for the comment on the baby pictures. I appreciate it.
Congratulations on fatherhood.
Thank you, sir. Well, it's the second one.
Yes, I think I noticed that from one of the pictures.
Yes, sir. But it's first son, so it's a lot of pressure.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a blessing. Thank
that's,
you.
That's awesome.
It is awesome. Thank you, sir. Anyway, so congratulations to all of us, AFC East, baby. Camps, always a good thing. I'm going to go to the list real quick. Netflix, of course, I mean, it's a given. The first half, if you listen to the the locker room speech by Belichick, the whole thing about, listen, from now on, we need to play 60 minutes, not 30 minutes, which absolutely true. But it's kind of, isn't that too late for us to talk about this? I mean, come on. It's, you know, got two more games in the regular season. It's kind of like a given that we really have to work on that.
Work on what in particular?
Like just playing a good 60 minutes of football.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. You really shouldn't be waiting this late in the season to work on that, but unfortunately this team does have to do that.
Yep. Yep. And I know we're talking about, you know, we're looking at all I see right now, John, is we have 5 games to play. That's just how I see it. Okay? So mm-hmm. Considering we are the first team, we have the bye week and playoff games. I'm just, you know, one game at a time. I don't talk about Super Bowl, believe me.
You just said we got 5 games to play.
Well, to get there, absolutely. Oh. Get there.
Okay.
You know?
I'm just busting chops.
I know. But, you know, and you guys were talking about the Bills and how much, you know, they have nothing to lose. So are the Jets, man. The Jets have really nothing to lose. If you get a chance, look up the locker room video. Rex Ryan talking to the guys after the Titans. It's like, first of all, these players love Rex Ryan like it's their god. And I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't know what is the dysfunction in the Jets organization. Is it the GM? Is it the coach? Is it a combination? But the players will do anything for Rex Ryan. They're talking to him after the win, and he's talking to them after the win. This was their Super Bowl. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It really is. I don't get it. But guess what? That's the team we're facing next. And they're fearless. They have nothing to lose. And these are the most dangerous team that you got to face.
Right.
Same as the Bills. So I agree with that. That is just I was going to the Jets game because it's here in New Jersey where I reside. But unfortunately, fortunately, my dude came in, but he ruined my life. I cannot go now because I have a baby.
Absolutely.
Yep. So other than that, we'll talk more tomorrow and hopefully Thursday. I give you my prediction.
Sounds good, Kareem.
All right, sir.
Thanks, pal.
Thank you.
All right, Kareem in New Jersey. Time for you as well at 855-PATS-500. Not only your nitpicks from Sunday, but who's underappreciated? Who's not getting the props? Who's not getting the run? Who's not getting the attention? Not so much underrated as underappreciated. See, I think there's a little bit of a difference. Underrating somebody, at least to me, indicates that you have them already pegged at a certain level, that they've either done better than it or worse than that. And I'm talking about somebody that's coming completely off the radar. Underappreciated. Now, it could be a player that you know about or that you knew about that has done a far better job than even you expected them to do. So I think there's a couple of different ways you can approach this. But underappreciated more than anything else is what I'm really looking for here as we get ready for Week 16 in the NFL season. All right, let's pause for a timeout. We'll read some of your cards and letters coming. Phone lines are still open at 855-PATS-500. Eric Friends from Boston.com covering the AFC East and the Patriots is also straight ahead. Moments away right here on Patriots Playbook.
Hot pastrami.
Subway big hot pastrami?
No. Pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway big hot pastrami!
Wanna split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway big hot pastrami melt. A monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. they now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Jumping into the second hour of Patriots Playbook here on a Nitpick Tuesday. Hashtag Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots.com radio and the Patriots Playbook. Welcome in Eric Friends from Boston.com, who covers the AFC East, as he normally appears with us on Tuesdays. Eric, how goes the battle?
It's going well. How are you doing, John?
Excellent today. Your thoughts then overall, first of all, on the Miami game from Sunday, because it definitely was a tale of two halves. Even though they had a lead at halftime, there was a smattering of boos that came, you know, wafting from the stands as the team went off the field with a 14-13 lead, largely because of a way I think that last minute or so played out, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, obviously the offense didn't play very well in the first half. They only scored 14 points. They weren't consistently moving the ball. They had that ugly turnover, the interception by Tom Brady, and really just didn't have any consistency. I think they had only 10 minutes of possession of the football in the first half against the Dolphins, 20 minutes. So definitely needed to get something going in the second half. Came out really guns blazing in the second half with the first possession. Marched right down the field for the touchdown. The defense kept playing well. They played well all day. Only gave up 3 conversions on 16 third down attempts. Did not give up a touchdown in the red zone once again. Blanking the opponent in the second half for the second straight week, and they've now given up only 6 points in the second half over the past 4 games. So seems to be that the defense specifically, but the team as a whole, playing much better in the second half of games over the past few weeks.
All right, so it's pretty clear then, you know, this team is figuring out how to do things in the second half. Is it a little bit late? We had a caller that suggested this earlier. Isn't it a little bit late in the season to be trying to figure out how to play a complete 60-minute game?
That's a good point, but I think you want to always, you know, you want to be able to adjust to what's happened over the course of the game. You can't always plan for everything. I think, you know, that the Patriots probably weren't expecting the Dolphins to throw it deep as much as they did, and especially on the first play of the game when Tannehill went deep to Mike Wallace over Malcolm Butler's head. That was probably something the Patriots weren't expecting because the Dolphins really haven't gone deep very much, but I think they did a great job of responding to that, making the right adjustments to adjust to what the Dolphins were trying to do offensively.
Right. So, you know, this team does need to, you know, figure out a way to perhaps, let's just say, become a little bit more efficient with their play in the first half on both sides of the ball, right?
Yeah, I would say that's fair. And like I said, you know, as long as they can keep adjusting, I think they'll be okay. I think, you know, the coaching staff being the great, I wouldn't say, you know, I would say they have the best coaching staff in football, and it's really the great equalizer for them in terms of, you know, if they start off slow, the coaching staff can usually find a way to figure things out.
Anything else stand out to you as far as something that would be nitpicky enough to be concerned over?
Well, the pressure on Tom Brady wasn't as bad as it's been. In the first half, it was relatively consistent in terms of getting after Brady, and then on the other side, Patriots weren't getting a whole lot of pressure on Tannehill to start the game, but mm-hmm. they ended up creating a lot of pressure down the stretch. That's been a nitpick of mine for a while now. I think the trench play really needs to step up overall.
You know, I kind of noticed that. Maybe it was just they kind of, you know, wore them down, which I think speaks at least to the ability of the Patriots front seven to apply the pressure. They're not getting to them, but they're slowly pressuring the other team's offensive line to the point where eventually they are getting to the opposing quarterback. So, you know, I think that goes without being noticed.
Well, we talk a lot about the coverage sacks and the ability of the secondary to hold coverage on the receivers and the back end, and how, you know, if they're able to run and cover with those guys for 2 to 3 seconds, that allows the pass rush some time to get after the quarterback. So I think it works collectively. I think the Patriots defense has been good about that all season long. You know, when the pressure's not getting home, the coverage on the back end holds up well enough that they don't have to worry about it, that they can eventually create some pressure. Not exactly in the amount of time you'd like. I mean, you'd rather not have a quarterback sitting back in the pocket for 3-4 seconds before he lets go of the ball, but it's getting there.
Okay. The turnaround from the first half to the second half, it was rather remarkable. The fact that they not only came out and scored 24 points in the third quarter, which we didn't even really realize until after the fact was a franchise record for most points scored in a third quarter, which it seems almost impossible to believe in 55 years, but I guess it is. And the fact that the defense, you know, pitched a shutout again when Miami really had it, you know, stacked up against them, I think it was sort of a double whammy in terms of impressive moves made by this team, and going from what they did in the first half to what they produced in the second half, to me is like that wasn't even a tale of two halves. That was a tale of two teams almost.
Interesting point. You know, like I've said, I feel like the coaching staff really has a lot to do with that. I think they made the right adjustment. You know, first half, second half, night and day, team definitely looked a lot different when they came out of the locker room. I wonder, you know, if they can continue to make those adjustments at halftime and play much better in the second half of games, you know, I like their chances. But like you said, I like to see them play a full 60 minutes of football.
Yeah, no question. I was, you know, curious to see what Bill Belichick had to say earlier today on Brandon Browner and the penalties, because he's been one of our favorite whipping boys and certainly one of mine as well, because he leads the team with 15 penalties called on the year, and I shorted him one this week, so I guess I need to learn how to add as well. But he kind of danced around the subject. I'm going to read the transcript here from earlier today here at the stadium. It says, the question came, was curious in your opinion on Brandon Browner. He's obviously brought a lot to the defense with the physical play. At the same time, I think he's been called for 15 penalties, some of them close calls, others maybe not so much. Curious of your views on that based on his style of play. Is there a little more tolerance for the higher penalty count, or is that maybe more of a concern, the high number? And Belichick's answer, penalties have been an issue for us all year as a team. We've had a lot of penalties, more than we want, way more than we want. We're trying to decrease that number and the frequency, so we're certainly not there yet. What was your take on how he answered that question about Brandon Browner?
Well, he did say as a team, and I think that's one thing that, you know, they have had a lot of penalties as a team. It's been on both sides of the ball. They're one of the most penalized teams in the league right now, and you know, that doesn't necessarily prohibit them from winning a Super Bowl. You know, the Seahawks last year were the most penalized team in football, and they won the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying that being the most penalized team in football gives you a better chance. I think that's stupid. But you definitely look at the team as a whole, you know, be it false starts, defensive holding, illegal contact, personal fouls. You know, they are right around the top of the league, pretty much all of those. And I think, you know, it's, you know, some of them are discipline penalties. Some of them are just, you know, awareness penalties. But I think, you know, as a team, they definitely need to get better. Browner's been, you know, kind of the whipping boy because he leads the team in penalties. But, you know, I think Nate Solder is second on the team in penalties. We don't hear nearly as much about him and his penalty problems as we did about as we do about Browner. And like you said, you know, a lot of those penalties that he gets called on after the fact, we're thinking that a ticky-tacky penalty that he's getting called on a reputation basis and not on it actually being a penalty. There are some where you can tell he's not playing within the rules, but there are others where it's pretty clear that he's getting called because of his reputation and not because of anything he did on the season.
Bingo. So that's 110% right on the money. And that's really the whole premise for the conversation right now, because something that, you know, that we've been talking about and I've mentioned, that he is getting some of these flags based on his reputation. Whereas, you know, if there's a play that's close, the officials are erring on the, oh, well, you know, if it's close, he probably did it with intent, and therefore that's a penalty. You know, there's got to be a point where, you know, the coaches, the staff, his teammates, somebody go up and say, look, you just can't take a chance on that anymore, because it could be a third down and 15 play, and they're going to call you for, you know, defensive holding or pass interference. It's going to give a team a whole new set of downs. That's going to end up costing you in a big game when these games are more magnified now, come playoff time, than they are at any other point in time on the schedule.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think they need to get it cleaned up soon enough, and I think that's something that, you know, I wouldn't say if Browner doesn't clean up penalties, they should put him on the bench. I think he's their best corner, or one of their best corners, obviously, behind Darrelle Revis. But,
yeah, I wouldn't go that far yet either, no.
Right, but I do think that, you know, physicality, I think that's something that they need. That's something that's been, you know, one of the characteristics of this defense this year has been the physicality that they've played with, and Browner brings a lot of that, and I think that's something that, you know, they need to have him around for that. And I look at him, 6'4", 221. You know, a lot of times it may look like a penalty because he just plays with such an aggressive style anyway, that, you know, something that may not be a penalty if another guy did it might look like a penalty because he's 6'4", 221. So he just is a lot more aggressive and a lot bigger. So, you know, the contact that might not get called by other smaller defensive backs because it doesn't look as egregious might get called on Browner because, you know, he has such long arms. I mean, he can get into pads of these receivers and make plays on the ball. And really, it doesn't look like a penalty to us, but it might look like a penalty to the officials because, you know, they're up close to it, and he's so much bigger, and it looks like it in the heat of the moment. And they got to make a split second decision. And I know that, you know, with the reviews going on in New York at the league office and Dean Blandino watching every penalty and yada yada, I think that's something that might be looked at a little bit more closely, but definitely a situation where I think Browner brings the physicality that they need, and it wouldn't be wise, in my opinion, to bench him for it.
He's just a big, bad bully back there, isn't he?
Basically.
Well, you know, that's, I think, even though I'm being kind of flipped with the remark, I think that that's something that the Patriots have to consider because of the size disadvantage that the largely smaller receivers are going up against him with. They're going to get the benefit of the doubt when there's a close play. And I just don't think that that is quite as evident to either Brandon or to the Patriots or to the coaching staff or to the teammates. Or I think that's an obvious thing that's staring them right in the face that, quite frankly, no one has really even considered. Maybe it's silly for them to consider it, but the fact of the matter is he keeps getting flags called on plays that could go either way. Both of his PI penalties in the first half this past Sunday, in fact, to me, were kind of like, wow, really? I mean, there was a doubt as to whether or not that really was legitimate pass interference, you know, as to the letter of the law, the rule in the book. And I feel like the Patriots are going to lose every single one of these toss-ups with Brandon Browner, and he's got to try to avoid it at all costs now.
Well, it's tough to say what to do about that because, you know, like I said, you can't bench him. He's one of your best corners. You don't want him to play different. I mean, like I said, you know, he's physicality of the defense. And really, you know, you don't want to coach a different technique. I think it's too late really to do that. I think he just needs to keep playing. And, you know, I think, you know, he makes a lot of great plays with his physicality. And I think it would be foolish of them to try to coach that out of him. You know, they went out and they signed him because of his physicality, presumably. And I don't think it would be smart for them to basically to neuter him and take
right.
away what's made him such a great player.
And that's a good point. That's a good point. But he needs to also play with an awareness that he's a marked man. And I don't think he's arrived at that point yet.
Well, I think it's tough to do when you've been playing that way for such a long time. That's made you the player that you are, gotten you where you are right now. The Patriots brought him in presumably to do that. So I don't think they want him to change. I don't think he's going to change. I think it's something that, you know, they're going to, I mean, personally speaking, I mean, obviously, you know, you don't ever want a penalty, but I mean, if it comes down to it, and I think Browner has said this in the past, I would rather take the 5-yard first down penalty than give up the 20-yard completion, which is going to result in a first down anyway.
Okay. Two more quick ones for you, Eric. Number one, question that I asked of our listeners today is not so much underrated, but an underappreciated player on this Patriots team that just isn't quite getting the run that has kind of caught your eye. You have one?
Interesting. I think a lot of guys, I mean, the spotlight's been on a lot of different guys this season because there's been a couple of injuries, so guys have had to step up and it's been a slew of guys that have been, you know, stepping up and producing at the different points in the season. I would say, I mean, Akeem Ayers seems to be getting a lot of recognition lately just because of the sack production that he's had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just the fact that he came in and he's been so productive for the Patriots and been such a key in their pass rush without Chandler Jones, and the fact that he comes in and now, you know, now with Chandler Jones back and healthy, you have three legitimate defensive ends who can rotate in and do different things in the pass rush and can sell each other and help get each other some rest. I think that's a huge factor for this team down the stretch, and especially after last year and the way that that ended with Chandler Jones and Rob Dinkovich having played such a significant workload and then being asked to continue that workload into the postseason where they were clearly out of gas. You know, I think that having Ayers around is going to be vitally important. I think that's something that, you know, they didn't have last year. I think that could be one of the big differences for them this year.
Okay, fair enough. Now, number two, fact is that, you know, since you spent some time covering the AFC East, that's who the Patriots get to go up against again this Sunday with the New York Jets. And I'd be remiss if we didn't at least give a tip of the hat to Buffalo for their win, you know, this past weekend. That kind of keeps them right in the thick of things right now.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the Bills were really, I mean, written off dead to rights, basically, after they lost last week. But I do think that they are in a position where, I mean, they play the Raiders this week, and then it'll be a really interesting Week 17 game, I think, between the Patriots and the Bills. I think a lot of Patriots fans are ready to write off this Bills team, and they think that it's going to be an easy win in Week 17, a lot like what it was last year. But I think this Bills team, they played the Patriots close the last time around. It was a 9-point game until the fourth quarter, and then really the Patriots opened it up with a couple of late touchdowns there. But definitely, I think the Bills have the ammunition to make some noise in that playoff hunt. It'll be interesting to see, I mean, down the line here what they do with the quarterback position because, I mean, Kyle Orton is clearly what's holding them back from reaching their maximum potential But they don't really have any options for moving on at the quarterback position this coming off season because they traded away their first round pick for Sammy Watkins. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with the quarterback spot. DJ Manuel, another year to develop, but he's been on the bench for most of it. So it'll be interesting if they put him back into the lineup or if they go back to Orton. That remains to be seen. But the Jets, definitely, you know, not the way they saw this season going. I think Rex Ryan at this point is coaching in his last couple of games here. I think the Jets are a dangerous team, if only because, like I said, I think the writing's on the wall for Rex Ryan. The players love him, and they clearly want to send him out on a high note if possible. Getting a win against the Patriots would be huge in that respect. So the Patriots are going to have their hands full this week against the Jets team that has a great defensive line. I know that secondary is very limited in talent just because of the injuries that they've had. That offense is not very good at all by any stretch of the imagination. They pretty much want to mask the quarterback position at all costs. They run the ball around 30 times a game these days. But if the Jets can play good defense and if they can keep the ball moving on offense by running the ball, it could be a tough one for the Patriots. But I still think the Patriots pick up the win there. It's just a matter of, I think the Jets are going to play a tough game. And they played the Patriots close the last three times they've played. So it'll be really interesting to see how it all plays out.
Agreed, and I could not agree more. I actually think that this may be a tough game simply because of the fact that those players love that coach and they would like nothing better than give him an opportunity to go out on a very, very high note. And I think that's as much of a reason to worry about this game on Sunday as any other that might exist.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, you know, they love Rex Ryan, and I think that's been one of the things that's been Woody Johnson from firing him. It's that they like the head coach and they like the personality and he inspires the players and he always has the players on his side and, you know, he knows how to motivate his guys, but definitely a situation where I think that relationship has run its course. And you know, the fact that they brought in John Idzik a couple of years back, and he was pretty much saddled with Rex Ryan from the beginning, I think that's something where, you know, they want to see Idzik get to pick his own guy and see how he does with his own guy. I think, you know, Idzik hasn't really done a great job as a general manager, but he didn't have a lot to start with. So it'll be interesting to see if they keep him around. But one thing that, you know, I think that they have to have in the back of their minds is that the head coaching search this year, you know, with John Idzik being in the position that he's in, he's probably on the hot seat. And, you know, are they going to find a head coach who's going to be willing to come into a situation where the general manager's on the hot seat?
No.
And, I mean, if the general manager goes, then the head coach probably goes as well. I mean, usually that's the case, although that hasn't necessarily always been the case with the Jets. And it hasn't been the case with a few teams recently. They've been trying to, you know, add that one last piece to get them over the hump. But I think the Jets are in a position where it would be smart for them to keep Idzik for now. Give him another chance to get his own guy, but I do think it'll be tough for them to find the right head coach to go with that mix.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It'll be tough to find a coach that wants to come in with who may be, you know, and try to work with who may be a lame duck GM. And then if they do make the change of GM, well, then that coach, no matter what kind of a job he did, is probably going to be on his way out. It's a no-win situation. It's a terrible situation for a team to be in. You know, he'd be smart if he just blew the thing up and started over. But no one ever accused Woody Johnson of being smart either.
Well, another interesting fact, look at where the Jets stand right now. They're in the hunt for one of those top five picks in the draft. They could presumably land one of the top quarterbacks, but you look at where that would leave them. And like I said, you know, if they have the head coach that comes in and he has Marcus Mariota and they show some flashes, but they don't necessarily do particularly well. And then John Idzik is gone, and the head coach is gone, and then they are back to, you know, having a quarterback they drafted high, but they don't have a head coach that drafted him. And then you wonder what the future holds in that respect. And, I mean, it just throws the whole thing out of sorts. So it would seem like their best bet would be to just hit the whole reset button this year.
Yeah.
With that top pick, let a brand-new regime come in and use that top pick in a way that will set the organization off in a brand new direction, and one that they can go with for a long time.
Good stuff, Eric. Thanks as always. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Okay. Thanks a lot, John. Good talking to you, man.
You too. Eric Friends, Boston.com, covering the AFC East and the New England Patriots, joining us as he does on Tuesdays. By the way, next week, because it's holiday week with Christmas coming around, we're only going to have a Tuesday show next week. That's traditionally what we do. We traditionally get, Christmas Eve. That's the one I'm thinking of. Christmas Eve off as well as Christmas Day. So we'll have to cram it all in on one day next week on Tuesday. More on that later this week. All right, let's get back to the phones. Here's our buddy Max in San Diego. Hey, Max.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good, sir.
Hey, question for you.
Go.
Obviously, I'm sure you already heard about Terrence Knighton and his proclamation or his little guarantee. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, some guys kind of get caught up in the heat of the moment because, they don't want to back down from, you know, a particular challenge, or, you know, they don't want to give any sort of sign of that they're being weak or what have you. And so he just made a boast, even though they really, you know, weren't very, you know, impressive in winning over San Diego this past week. And I think he just misspoke, and then he couldn't really back his way out of it. So he just kind of made the problem worse. And now it's, you know, potential bulletin board material, which is fine. But I don't think anybody really thinks anything of it one way or the other than maybe he just needs to learn to, you know, kind of keep his emotions in check.
This is true. And the also thing I'll say about that is right here. I would see he doubled down on that. I think it was yesterday or today. If I'm going to read it somewhere, one of the tweets, we doubled down on his little guarantee. But it has to raise a couple of questions. One, did he not remember? I mean, did he not take any lessons from Anthony Smith back in 2007? You remember that?
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. No, that probably, though, went right over his head. So, I mean, I don't know that he can remember back to 2007.
Yeah, probably so. And then here's the other thing I guess he didn't remember is – you know, they were talking, at least their fans were, they weren't themselves, but their fans were doing a lot of chirping before the Donkeys came to town and got their bell rung in our house. So I would kind of ask one question of Mr. Nightingale real quick here. If you really think you're that bold to come to New England again, especially if it is in New England, in the snow, in the ice, in the cold, which I'll remind you, your quarterback ate in our house. You really want to get turned into a fairy again for a second time? Maybe we just need a bigger tutu for you. I mean, let me just say one more thing to Mr. Nightingale and close it out with this right here. Unless you've seen your quarterback raise a Lombardi trophy over his head three times, you can shut the hole under your nose, big boy. Just keep them soup coolers shut. Come out here and let our boys do the talking on the field. You can get your ass whooped and go home with the, oh my God, I just got my ass whooped again on my face.
I like that soup cooler. That's good.
That seems to be the only thing his mouth is good for these days is cool and soup, because obviously you can't talk. You can't back it up on the friggin' field, especially when it comes to us. First you get past Andy Dalton, then you can maybe talk about us a little bit. We'll see.
That's good.
But
that's good.
As far as I'm concerned, until you've seen your quarterback do that three times, you have not earned the right. So I don't want to hear it.
Okay. So says Max from San Diego. I agree.
You know,
there you go. I like it.
The only other thing I will say, I just wanted to congratulate the Pats. Awesome win. You know, just like everybody else, I really didn't like that first half, but the second half, outstanding. Definitely outstanding. Every single one of them. So my hat's off to the fellas. Pats run the East. And let's get them. Let's get the Jets.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Max. Thanks you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
All right, you got it. By the way, just before we all forget, Kevin just points this out to me here, but you know, Terrence Knighton,
being objective.
Yeah, I know you're trying to be objective, and it's correct to be objective. But Knighton dominated the Patriots front back in January. You do remember that, right, Max? I mean, I probably shouldn't.
Knighton scored 16 points, and they struggled to get that far.
Yeah, they did. They did. Knighton had a hell of a game. He had a hell of a game.
I'm not saying Gronk would have obviously made a big difference, but. The facts are the facts.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. He did make a kind of a name for himself. I think that's where he got that off-season commercial with him on the treadmill or whatever it was, you know, the Goodyear tire one or whatever the hell it is. I don't know. He got himself a Peyton Manning type of promotion.
Yeah, and if you remember, just to piggyback on that, then we'll let it go because I don't want to blow smoke up Denver's you-know-what. But Blount's coming out party mainly was Buffalo last year,
mm-hmm.
and then Indianapolis in mm-hmm. the first round, or mm-hmm. for the Patriots, the first round of the divisional playoffs against Indy here,
mm-hmm.
and he ran wild. Kickoff returns, everything, right?
Right.
So all we heard going into the AFC title game was they're going to control the clock. They're going to keep Manning off the field. They're going to run Blount. They couldn't run the ball at all.
Because of Terrence Knighton.
Terrence Knighton was a huge factor in that.
Yep, that's correct.
So that's all I wanted to say.
No, I think that's actually a good point. Something that maybe then could potentially turn into England's favor this year because, you know, Knighton's opened up his yapper.
Yeah, because people forget, like, you know, they scored 16 points, they struggled, but people forget kind of what the idea and the game plan sort of was going into that game. And the Patriots did try to run the ball. It wasn't like they came out five wide and spread. They did try to run the ball, mm-hmm. but they couldn't. Mm-hmm. And then they had to abandon that, and it just wasn't successful because they were so one-dimensional.
Right, correct. Denver did to them what the Patriots tried to do to other teams, and they made them one-dimensional. And that's where you have to give, you know, Denver credit for doing that a year ago. But, as we all know, this is a different year and a different scenario and a little bit different teams. And let's see if we've also got a different venue come January. Here's Trey in Memphis. Hello, Trey.
Hey, what's going on? How's it going, big guy?
Excellent today. How are you?
Oh, hey, man. I'm doing well. You know, we're down the last – going down the home stretch here. So I think we're down to the last quarter, so – in his mile relay. So, I want to make a few comments on something, but I do want to comment on this Terrence Knighton guy.
Okay.
You just said that, of course, he did dominate the pass in January, but the guy that he dominated, hell, is no longer on his team. So, and which was Logan Mankins. He kicked Logan Mankins' ass from start to finish.
Okay, fair point.
And Logan Mankins is still getting his ass whipped against good pass rushers. So, I mean, so it's kind of like, but anyway, Terrence Knighton was a non-factor in the first meeting this year. So, and he really hasn't been doing anything this year. He's had a couple of, well, he had a decent game against the Chargers, which the Chargers is no way, their offensive line is, well, their offense is not even close to ours. So, I mean, if he want to ride off of his success in January, you know, to be as it may, I mean, you know, that's up to him. I mean, but Terrence Knight is my least worry. So, hey, I mean, like I said, man, we still got a lot of football left done, and let's see what happens.
Fair enough.
I want to talk about our guy, Brandon Browner. The way Browner played doesn't bother me. It's kind of like I look at Browner as a Dennis Rodman, John, and a Rasheed Wallace. I mean, you know, him having his edge is what make him who he is.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, you don't want to – I mean, you look at it, John, the Pistons knew what kind of player they was getting with Dennis Rodman, as well as, you know, the Chicago Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
So the edge that he brought to those teams helped those guys win championships. I mean, so this is what we need, John. I mean, you just look at our pass defense. Our defense as a whole, the last 5-6 years or so, done or even longer, they were nowhere as aggressive and had this much swagger that they have. I mean, this defense that the Patriots have has a lot of swagger, John. I mean, so, you know, what do you think about this?
Well, you know, I agree with you. That's part of who he is and kind of what Eric Friends mentioned a little while ago. His ability to be physical with receivers is made him the threat that he is. My whole point is that now he has to sort of elevate his, he can't just be the Brandon Browner that he's always been. What he has to do is his game now has to evolve to the point where he's still effective physically, but he's not as marked a man by, you know, the officiating crew. And I think that there's a way to do that. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not sure how he's going to go about it, whether or not it's a simple, you know, change in technique or philosophy or whatever it may be. But if he doesn't do it, then his effectiveness as a defensive back is going to be limited.
Yeah, I mean, John, I understand that. I mean, but you know, it's kind of like you know, you don't want to change a person's mindset and his mentality. And I look at Chad Johnson, we made a mistake, man. You know, telling him to be somebody that he's not. And I think that you can ruin a guy's career, man. I mean, you know, Brandon Browner was 31, 32. To have him to – I mean, if you don't want to, you know, limit his ability to where, okay, he's not – to where he's overthinking. And a lot of times, John, you can mess an athlete up. And at this point in his career, man, he haven't cost us the game. And like I said, man, John, I'll take a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he's going to be aggressive like that, I mean, you just got to live with it. I mean, you have to live with it, John.
What if that penalty, though, Trey? I'm just going to play devil's advocate here with you. What if that penalty leads to a touchdown that beats you?
Well, John, I'm going to say this. If it leads to a touchdown that beat us, I mean, it's not like, I mean, I'd rather for him make a mistake trying to make a play versus looking at what's happened to us in the Super Bowl, the last two Super Bowls that we've gone to, John. You had guys out of position, you know, blowing coverages. I mean, you know, and with them being, if they would have shown a little aggressiveness, like then you look at Rodney Harris. All his career, he's been a physical guy. So the one time he decides to let up and, you know, try to make a, you know, not be as aggressive going for the big hit, he tried to be a pass coverage guy and try to make a play on the ball versus dislodging the ball from the athlete, John.
Okay.
So you got to stay aggressive. I'd rather go out fighting, John, and just go out the way we've been going out the last few years. All right, buddy.
All right. That's fair. I mean, you know, we might have to agree to disagree where that's concerned, but I certainly see your point.
One thing about it, it's very rare I disagree. Matter of fact, this is the first time I disagree. So, hey.
Well, that's okay. It's okay. Great minds can agree to disagree, Trey.
But one thing about it, I'm going to stick to my guns and you're going to stick to yours. And I said, you're a great journalist, John. Hey, I have no problem with you, buddy.
Atta baby.
No problem at all, and I'm going to keep living to you, big guy.
Way to go.
All right, man.
Thanks, Trey. Appreciate that. So you don't have to necessarily agree. You can agree to disagree. That's, you know, all good and conversation and debate and everything else. I see his point. I don't know that I agree with it. He sees my point, at least I think he does, and he doesn't know that he agrees with it. All right, that's fine. No big deal. Ultimately, the decision to be a player of that style is going to come down to what Brandon Browner is comfortable with and whatever he can get away with, and whether or not what he gets away with either helps the Patriots win a game or costs the Patriots to lose a game. It's going to come down to that. It's going to come down to that somewhere. And if the Patriots win out, well, then ultimately it didn't matter. It didn't matter a way. It didn't matter at all. Not a bit. Only time's going to tell that. All right, let's get to some emails and some other posts here on Twitter and Facebook. Matthew sends this from Watertown. Matt in Watertown says, John, my first nitpick is TB12's first half. Enough said. Browner doesn't have any more excuses for these penalties. See, here's where I'm going now. He's basically forgetting football fundamentals when it comes to defending a wide receiver. Can't say it enough. If he doesn't stop these blatant penalties, it could cost them exponentially in the playoffs. All right, somebody else kind of agrees with me there. The only team I'm concerned about is Buffalo after seeing what they did to the Packers. Their defense basically won that game. They are a team that is desperate for a taste of the playoffs. I say the Patriots should ride this momentum into the last snap of the season and not rest anyone. That is what the bye is for. Could not agree more, Matt.
By the way, John.
Yes.
Just so, you know, we don't get to this kind of too late in the show.
Mm-hmm.
We had a second prediction winner.
Oh, I did. I was just getting to that.
That wrote in, and I have since corresponded.
And the reason, yes, it's Glenn in Ottawa. Congratulations, yep. Glenn in Ottawa. He also predicted 41-13. The reason that I missed it is because I didn't have access to the email over the weekend.
He wrote in on Friday
because
he said he couldn't make the show on Thursday, which is more than understandable. But we will honor our promise, and I have reached out. I just wanted you to know. Reached out to Glenn.
Good.
And he will get a yearbook mailed to him within the next couple of days.
So that's two winners.
Dose.
Yeah. Dose winners.
Amazing. The Dolphins are magnets.
They are magnets. Like I said, we had four or five winners last
year.
Thank
God we're
not
playing them in the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding. Otherwise, we'd have a bunch
of
winners.
So I just wanted to get that out of the way so you could motor through the emails.
Thank you for doing that. Yes, and congratulations to Glenn in Ottawa, who was winner number two of the Media Guide Yearbook for correctly predicting 41-13 last Thursday, or Friday as it was, because he listened to us on the podcast. So that's a win. There's no question about it. That's a win. Just that I did not see it because it came email on Friday, and I don't have access to this email account until I get back in here in the studio on Tuesday. So that's why I never saw it. But congratulations, Glenn. Let's see. Now, Matt says, I'm sure you heard about Terrence the Pot Roast Knighton essentially predicting an easy win in Gillette and winning the Super Bowl, whether or not he meant to make that assertion. Do you think Bill Belichick will fixate on this and show it to the team if and when they face the Broncos in the playoffs? I don't think he has to, Matt. don't think he has to, because we're all fixating on it, so the guys are undoubtedly going to hear about it if they haven't heard about it already. I'm sure that they hear about it. You know, guys talk. You know, they're not oblivious. They hear things. They know things. They know who the talkers are, too. Jeff in Calgary says, let's not be having the discussion about resting players next week, this week. First, we need to beat the Jets, and the Bengals need to beat Denver. If both of those things don't happen, then none of this matters. If we do clinch home field advantage this week, then that's a conversation that could be had all of next week. And, Jeff, I'll go one step further. We don't need to have it next week either because, quite frankly, the Buffalo Bills could be playing for their playoff lives. You'd better put something representative out on the field. If you don't put something representative out on the field, then why are you even why even play the game? I so hate that. I can't even tell you. Plus, you're going to have a week off in the playoffs. You got the bye. Why would you rest anybody for 2 weeks? Then you risk putting rust back on their game. Resting players is just ridiculous. And, you know, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I'll never buy it. Amir says, I think this is one of those spam emails. Somebody looking for a boyfriend.
Thank God neither one of us are single. Thank God. Laughed so hard his headphones fell off. He can't even hear me right now. Put those things back on. Put those back on.
Thank you. The headphones
pull,
came flying
pull it
off.
Together. Pull it together.
Wait, I'm going to read this. How are you doing? I hope that all is well with you. I desire a good-hearted man with love and happiness. I am open and social. I seek real love relationship because I have more to offer to my chosen one than just love. Therefore, reply me, and I will tell you more about me. I will send you images of me once I get your reply. did she think that, or Amir sounds like a guy's name, first of all, but did yeah. Amir did Amir think that she was going to get a football player with this, you think?
I don't know. He, she, whatever.
It?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know how to respond to that.
I'll forward that to the proper authorities.
Yeah, forward that down the hall, see how it goes. Put that in the locker room.
Really? Get over it, Rook. She wasn't looking for you. Randy from New Orleans. I have just two major nitpicks. Oh, okay. First one is the slow start of the offense again, which could be from the lack of production from Blunt, who doesn't run good in the first half. That's fair. Second is the slow start of the defense. They've shut out teams in the second half for four straight weeks, but it would be just awesome for them to do that for 60 minutes. And he underscores 60 minutes of football in all caps. My underappreciated player is Silver Salinga. He has constantly been passed over as just being a backup to Will Fort, but was the staple to this team's D-line coming in last year, did a good job. He is a good complementary starting tackle along with Will Fort and Branch that can finally help them run the 3-4 effectively. All right, Randy, that's excellent. That's excellent. Number one, your point about 60 minutes of football is spot on. But number two, an underappreciated player, somebody who really hasn't gotten a lot of play. And a lot of that is because Salinga spent a lot of time on the IR with a designation to return this year. And I'm sure you're aware of that. You know that. But now that he's come back in for a couple of weeks, you can see what kind of a difference he can make in terms of collapsing a pocket, in terms of run defense, in terms of pressure, in terms of just solidarity on that side of the football. Salinga's a good choice. Very good choice. Let's go to Kashif, who says, John, 'twas the season of football when all the clubs but the Jets were stirring. Instead of stockings, there were hats and T-shirts hung by the Pats players' lockers in hopes that soon more would be there. I bet your hat and T-shirt is keeping you warm today, John. Good times. I didn't get any swag. Did you get any swag, Kev? I didn't get any swag. Probably because we don't suit up and play with those guys. They got the free swag.
Yeah, I've never gotten anything.
No. Anyways, I really can't find much nitpick today, but I'm so pumped by the Golden Boys' run and after it. If it isn't clear to anyone yet, Brady wants that Lombardi next year. Or this year. This season. I know that he's hungry from other performances, but I was corrected after that run. He's terribly hungry. He'll make mistakes, yes, but he's showing, scratch that. He has always shown that he'll bounce back. Oh, here's a nitpick. It's funny how things can turn over the past two-thirds of the season. We always had good first halves and not so good second halves. Now, the past two games, those roles have been reversed. Come on, Pats, keep it together now. Start strong and then end like champions. Good point, Kashif. Finally, the nitpick of the day is why we, the fans, can't guess the correct score of a Pats game yet. Well, we had two winners this week, Kashif. Two winners. We had Herman in Waco, and we had Glenn in Ottawa, Ontario. How about that? Two. Both guys predicted 41-13. So there you go. This one comes from Chad in the ATL, who says, John, nitpicks. Allowing another score right before halftime. Yep, just like in Green Bay. Number two, Tom Brady's inconsistencies in the first half. Completely agree. In fact, that he got those passes batted down at the line of scrimmage, as I was talking about earlier. Number three, throwing the ball when you're up 20-plus at the end of the game. Now, I don't have a problem with that, because like I said earlier as well, Chad, I think these guys had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder against Miami from the supposed chirping that was going on from the Dolphins after whacking the Patriots in the season opener. So they've been slowly stewing for the better part of 3 months plus over what happened in Miami in week one. I don't have any problem with it. Says underrated players, Sebastian Vollmer. Even when the O-line had its woes, Seabass was still and has been very consistent. How many times have you heard someone say, man, Vollmer really screwed the pooch there? None. That's actually a good point. He has been guilty some this year of getting whipped around on a rush end, but he's been pretty solid. And for a guy that really has been marked more for his injury-prone inability to stay in the lineup over the last couple of years, because he does have a congenital back problem, I believe, he has been pretty solid. So I think that's a very good choice, Chad, for an underappreciated, not so much underrated, but underappreciated player in Vollmer. And he also says Julian Edelman, a.k.a. Minichon. I know he's not under the radar, but I don't think he gets the recognition he deserves. He is one of the most athletic human beings I've ever seen. Let him take a snap at QB and kicker so he can say he's played every position. You know, he's probably the first guy, at least since Doug Flutie, who you could say could probably do that just about everywhere. I mean, catch a pass, run with a ball, throw a pass, kick the ball. You know, he could be the human punt, pass, and kick contestant out there on the field. That's actually a really good idea. I would love to see him take a snap at quarterback. Why couldn't, and I'm not sure, I wonder if they have this even in the playbook, because I'm not entirely certain they do. They should have some wildcat stuff with Edelman back there, shouldn't they? Or maybe zone read? You know how the zone read option, and Miami, by the way, one of my nitpicks actually this week was against Miami. Why the hell didn't they stay with the zone read? Because the two times that Ryan Tannehill kept the ball, I think he had double digit gains on both of them. I think he had like two carries for like maybe 24 yards out of the zone read option. They ran it twice. Why the hell didn't they keep running it? You'd have to force the Patriots at least to stop it. Crazy. Don't know why they gave up on it. I would have run it, and I'm a proponent of making somebody stop me. And if you don't stop me, guess what? Here's what's coming. It's coming again. Yo, here we come. Woohoo! Zone read. Say it, hut, and stop me. And when you do, I'll adjust. But if you can't stop me, why change it? That makes no sense. That's overthinking things. I wonder if they got that in the arsenal for a Minitron. I might have to do a little research on that one, because I think he'd be perfect for something like that. Run the zone read, or run something out of a wildcat formation, just to completely mess with people's minds. Now, wouldn't that mess with their minds? Patriots line up, you know, say in a short yardage situation, maybe a red zone situation, and there's no Brady back there. Better yet, put Brady back there, put Edelman in the backfield with him, and snap a direct snap to Edelman. Brady can spin out of the way. Edelman can still run the option. If you have a full house backfield, you could do that. That way you'd have somebody else back there that he could either, you know, pitch to or hand off to. I could draw up some plays. Kind of like, you know, I used to draw them up in the sandlot in the dirt all the time. I was always the bottle cap when I drew up plays in the dirt. My friend was always the stick. He was the stick. I was the bottle cap. I liked being the bottle cap. I don't know why. And it wasn't even a Coca-Cola bottle cap. It was a Pepsi Cola bottle cap. Can you believe that? I don't even like Pepsi that much. Oh, I shouldn't say that. It is the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
just been a Coke fan my whole life. I don't know. Old habits are hard to die. But I was always a Pepsi Cola bottle cap whenever we were drawing plays in the dirt, playing football in the, you know, in the schoolyard with my buddies. Okay, love to digress. And even Eric's not here to digress with me. Steve in Killeen, Texas says, John, as you have pointed out, the entire first half could be the nit to pick. However, I have to pick TB12 and his misses to wide-open receivers deep downfield. Yeah, he did take a chunk down at Brian Timms and just a little bit off target.
He also had a bad one with now he was getting a little heat on him, but he had Gronk on in the first half on like just a complete fly route. Gronk had a cornerback on him one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And Gronk was three steps ahead of him, and it was underthrown.
Underthrown.
And let the cornerback catch up and knock it
away.
Yeah,
knock it away.
And that's when even if you're a little off, you give him a chance for a jump ball,
Good point.
But it was just like so underthrown, you know.
There wasn't even a chance for coming back the ball or making a jump for
that
it.
That one and the Timms one are the two that stand out.
I would always rather, even as a receiver, and I played a little receiver when I played, I would always rather have the ball overthrown than underthrown.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes I can see where someone would say, well, I'd rather have it underthrown because if I'm coming back to the ball and I get hit by the defensive back, it's a flag every time.
Yeah.
So I can understand that, but I was always one of those guys that loved to go up and try to get the ball, even though I wasn't that athletically gifted. I did always have pretty good hands, so I would always want to go up and try to grab it out of the air.
That one made me wince because you could see it developing. It was on your side of the field.
Yeah.
He was streaking down your side of the Dolphins sideline.
Right.
And he's three steps clear of I forget which cornerback it was, but a guy that's half his size. And I'm like,
it's Cortland Finnegan, I think.
Yeah, like, just give him
Finnegan
a chance.
Finnegan was on him most of the game.
Just give him a chance.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Give him a chance and he'll make the play. Steve says, my other would be attempting to use Vereen as a power back running the ball. He's far better suited for draw and screen plays. That's a good one. As far as who has been underappreciated, the Pats kickers. See, now it's taken us, we've got 11 minutes left in the program, and just now someone is saying the Patriots kickers and Steven Gostkowski. He is my most underappreciated player on this roster, bar none. His field goals in the second half put him past Adam Vinatieri for the all-time leading scorer in Patriots franchise history. And when he comes in the game, we expect him to make everything he kicks, knowing that, you know, he's a byproduct of his own consistency. He's a victim to his own consistency. Because we expect him to make everything. The team, the coaches, they expect him to make everything. And sometimes it's just not as easy as it looks. Underappreciated. Steven Gostkowski epitomizes underappreciated football players. Steve here says, Adam won a Super Bowl, and now Steven has scored more points than Adam to take the record for most points. We as spoiled Pats fans take for granted that when our kickers take the field for a field goal or PAT, that those points are automatic. Bingo. We have been extremely blessed to have the talent that has, for the most part, made the points in the kicking game an afterthought. As always, thanks and keep up the outstanding job. Thank you, Steve. That's a great point, and I'm really happy that you wrote that, because I was going to save it for last, that my underappreciated player, bar none, beyond anybody else on this entire 53-player roster, is Steven Gostkowski. It just is. Has to be. I mean, we expect him to do things that we take for granted that it's still tough to do, and without them, this team isn't near as good or near as potent offensively. He's bailed this team out of some tight jams. He's been as accurate as anybody in the league with extra points and even with field goals this year as well. And he's done that for his entire, 8-9 year career. Hard to believe he's even been around that long because again, he's underappreciated. We don't even know how long he's been around. Quick, what jersey number does he wear? Okay. I think I heard somebody yell 3. Okay. But it took you half a second. You had to think about it, didn't you? Just because, you know, TB12 is Tom Brady's 12 and some others, and Vince Wilfork's 75 and Gronk is 87, and real easy, those come to mind. Boom, boom, boom. You had to stop and think for at least a split second. What's Gostkowski's number? 3. Okay. You had to think. That's the whole point. Underappreciated. Here's the email from Glenn. He said, because I was sending my prediction on Friday because they had their company Christmas party on Thursday, then I thought maybe it was because I live in Canada, Why we didn't announce him as the winner. Nope. Just because you, well, actually it was because you did send your prediction in on Friday and you sent it to the email, which is fine. And I'm glad we were able to catch up to it. But for anybody who's listening to our Prediction Thursdays on the podcast, the best thing to do is to send it on Twitter because that's my own Twitter account. And so that's why I will always see it. I won't miss it. You can send it to the Facebook page and you can send it to the web radio account like Glenn did. And there, you know, there's a good chance that we'll see it, but there's always a chance that it gets erased over the weekend because we don't have access to it over the weekend. So Glenn, the best thing I can tell you is you got lucky. And I guess in this case, it's better to be lucky than good. And in your case, you were both. So good on you, mate. Oh, that's Australian. Okay. I'll stop that now. Here's one from Zoe who says, Dear Sir or Madam Marketing Manager, we searched your contact information on the internet that your company is a reputable marketer agent for an advertising equipment in your country.
That's for sure.
We are reputable. That's excellent. We'll pass that on to, pass that on to marketing, right? Let them know that they're reputable. Drew in Bowie, Maryland says, my nitpick is that I missed Tom's 17-yard run due to trying to put a basketball hoop over halftime. Well, you dope. You can't do that at halftime. If you're anything like me, that's going to at least take you a day. It's going to take you all day, in fact. Most penalized teams in order. Seattle, Denver, Buffalo, Tampa, New England, St. Louis. Five of the six are competitive, solid defensive teams. Least penalized teams are Jacksonville, Miami, Carolina, New Orleans. Patriots had one borderline block at the back punt return callback and one let go. Better to push the envelope than to have 5-yard returns. As far as Browner goes, I still think staying aggressive puts the pressure on the refs to make the calls. I think there's a level of fatigue and blowing the whistle on every play. Even if he commits a fourth quarter penalty, look at the difference he made for the rest of the game. That's fair. It's clear that, you know, some of you are okay with his aggressiveness. I just don't happen to be okay with that aggressiveness because I always fear the one penalty that's going to keep the defense on the field when they otherwise could have gotten off the field and turned the ball over to the offense. Whereas giving the defense another crack at scoring themselves, which is kind of what happened at the tail end of the half on Sunday. Although the Patriots defense didn't lead to it, but nevertheless, it was the offense that put the Miami offense back on the field and led to that late score that could have turned the game around. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. Most of my nitpicks have been mentioned. Biggest was the play calling on O in the first half, especially at the end of the half. The D sleepwalking through the first half and three Brady's deep ball inaccuracy. Ninkovich is my underrated player, although he is getting a little extra attention lately. In my honest opinion, he is every bit of a superstar on this D and doesn't get the accolades that Chandler Jones or Hightower or Collins have been getting, and yet he deserves it. Good point there on Ninko. In fact, Chanel on Twitter also said Ninko as well as her underappreciated player. Don't think you can go wrong with either one of those. That's pretty good. Let's see what else we have. All right, let's get to Twitter. I mentioned Chanel said Ninkovich was her most underappreciated player. And then it looks like just a bunch of retweets and things from everything else. Max in San Diego asked me hearing about Knighton running his soup coolers. And so we did get him on the line to talk about that as well. Now let's get to Facebook and see what we have here to kind of wrap up the show. Let's update this. Pardon me. There it goes. And we're good. All right, Aaron says, John, I'm a big Patriots fan. I live in Louisiana, and I hate always hearing about a team that's trying to still make it into the playoffs, but it feels good to be a Pats fan down here. I feel like the Pats need to run Gray more. I love how he is quick to find the hole and seems like the average more in between the tackles than Blunt, sometime with explosiveness more. He says, we're going to win against the Jets. That's no problem. Thanks for listening, and go Pats. All right. Thank you, Aaron. Let's see. Nick in Vegas. Oh, he's just telling me, great first hour. Don't let up. Don't spit the bit like the Niners. Thanks, Nick. Thanks for your confidence. Don't spit the bit. Benjamin writes in, I worked during the game. That's his nitpick. Yeah, well, talk to your boss about that. He says, basically, Miami crying and filing a complaint after a 28-point loss. Yeah, for those that may or may not be aware, Miami was claiming that I think the Patriots had an illegal formation on the field goal block that was ultimately swatted down by Jamie Collins and returned for 62 yards by Kyle Arrington. And look, I've kind of looked at it a couple of times myself. I'm sure many of you have done the same thing. It doesn't look like there's anybody offsides. They were claiming that you can't stack six on one line of the side on the side of the line of scrimmage, and I can't imagine that the Patriots would have done something concertedly that was already written in the rule book. There might be a vagary or two in there. I just, look, you didn't make the block. Jamie got his big paw up in the air and swatted it down. There was a lower trajectory on the kick. I don't know what else to tell you. Don't get your kick blocked. Better yet, don't stall your drive and score a touchdown. Anyway, Benjamin also says Brady's deep balls have been bad all season. Dante writes, most underrated player on this Patriots squad has to be Patrick Chung. He's really solidified that defense while being a force in the run game. He comes in and does his job even in pass coverage. When opposing QBs are looking up downfield and can't find anyone open, he's been a great part of that. It's a very good point, Dante. Patrick Chung is an excellent choice for underappreciated player on this roster. Chung, to me, in fact, probably, in my opinion, as I said earlier, Gostkowski's number one. Chung and Ninkovich would be right behind. And maybe not even that necessarily in that order. Ninkovich and Chung. Doesn't matter. 1A, 1B. Something else. Or 2A and 2B. Both great choices. John also writes, he says, most underappreciated player for the Patriots is Browner. Local media kills him for the penalties he has week in and week out, but it's his physical presence that sets the tone for the Pats D that hasn't been seen in a decade. Underappreciated? I guess you could probably put it like that. But I think that's one of the reasons why he's most appreciated, to be honest with you, because of that physical tone he does set. You're right about the fact that a lot of the media kills him. I'm not the only one that, you know, has an apparent, you know, bug up his rear about Brandon Browner's over-physicality in certain instances. I just think he needs to have more awareness that he's a marked man, and I just don't think he wants to admit it to himself that the officials are looking for reasons to throw flags his direction. John also says, when it comes to resting the starters, look at what happened to the Dungy Peyton Colts back in the 2000s. They seem to always rest their starters and play flat in the playoffs. Patriots had first-round bye wrapped up in 07 and 10, still played starters in Week 17. I am all for them staying fresh, especially with a week off. Good point, John. That should end the debate right there because that's a great point by you. I'm going to give our final word of the day to Sean on Facebook, who says, my nitpick is the game plan at the end of the first half. I think the Patriots should have been more aggressive and try to make a first down, even if they're trying to run out the clock. I don't like the first and second down draw with Vereen up the middle. Play is too obvious. It hasn't worked all season. Now, maybe if Blount was also in the backfield, maybe it would have fooled the Dolphins. In terms of what is brought up every week, the Browner penalties, I can see both arguments. We would all hate it if a PI cost us, pass interference, cost us a playoff game, and everyone wants him to stay aggressive. But I think you're asking for too much. Patriots brought him in knowing what he offers and will not be able to change him. Brandon Browner is what he is. And I've kind of come to that conclusion too, Sean, which is why I chose to end with your nitpick here, because I think it's a pretty good one. You know, I don't think I necessarily am harping on it. I'm just trying to point out that this could end up costing you. So if it does, and everybody gets all up in arms over it, I told you so. That's really that all needs to be said here, but I told you so. Hopefully it won't happen. Same patch time, same patch channel manana here in the playbook. Hashtag WTF Wednesday focuses on the JETS. Jets, Jets, Jets. Hard to believe, two weeks left of the regular season. And the encounter on Sunday afternoon with the Jets at MetLife Stadium. We'll jump into that tomorrow. Hope you'll jump into the playbook with us right here on Patriots.com Radio.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.